Welcome to the Generous Business Owner Podcast, where business owners gain inspiration and encouragement to live a legacy, not just leave one. And now your hosts, Jeff Thomas, Alan Barnhart, and Jeff Rutt.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's Generous Business Owner Podcast. My name is Jeff Thomas, and we have the whole crew, ladies and gentlemen. Co-host Jeff Rutt. Say hello, Jeff.
Hello.
And Alan Barnhart is in the house. Say hello, Alan.
Hey, Jeff. Good to be with you.
And then we've got our special guest this week, Ben Fisher. I'm going to let him tell the story, a serial entrepreneur, engineer at heart, or by education maybe only, but started a couple energy companies as founder, is all about scaling all kinds of kingdom businesses. Alan and he are going to have, you're going to be treated to a really unique discussion about what they're doing in what we call a kingdom companies group. So how do these kingdom focused companies work together on their giving and that sort of thing? Very unique story here, but let's kick it off. Jeff Rutt, why don't you kick it off with our first question?
Yeah, thank you for being on the podcast today, Ben. Kick us off with, tell us a little bit about the early years of Ben Fisher. What was it like in the Fisher household, formation of just your spiritual walk, your generosity mindset? And yeah, just where did some of those early heart directions come from?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I know this is about the Generous Business Podcast, but just like there aren't many Christian businesses per se, there are Christians in business.
Yeah.
Also, it's about the people that create the generosity, and it's about Jesus. So, but thank you so much for having me. My story begins in Houston, Texas. My folks, I grew up there for the first 10 years, and I had a mother that was just so supportive and cared about me deeply. We went to church. My father was a Navy captain, was a great leader in business and in many areas. And a lot of good wisdom to pass along and some skills as well. We moved to Tennessee when I was 10 years old. And I remember going to church. My mother was, got us involved in youth group. My dad actually didn't really come to church except on Easter and Christmas. But he supported what my mom was trying to instill in us. And I really saw that. It didn't come till later in life that I really sought it out myself. Some of the examples of things, I remember my inventor side, my entrepreneur, the roots of the entrepreneurial areas were, friends. When I was a kid, I remember my mother having trouble growing plants as an example, because it didn't get watered regularly. She wasn't a gardener per se, but she liked to have plants around. And I thought, why can't I create something that automatically waters plants?
Really? So how old were you when you started thinking about that?
Oh, those type of things, 8, 10, 12 years old.
Wow.
Just
cool.
Coming up with ways. And anyway, it got pretty complex. It took German and I tried to write a program on the computer to translate German before Google got a hold of it. And I found out that's pretty complicated too. So what I did learn is that things get complicated fast. So my had supportive parents. Now you fast forward, and I've got a wonderful wife. We've been married 25 years. We have three amazing children. Two of them still in high school, but one of them taking a gap year. And it's a journey. I think if you'd asked me 20 years ago, I think I still would have said it's a destination that I was working on. But boy, is this life a journey?
Yeah,
it is a grateful journey.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about, before we move on to the career, talk a little bit about the influence of, you mentioned youth group, what impact, and then you mentioned coming to faith, getting really serious about your faith later in life as an adult, but what were some of the seeds planted in those early years, both spiritually and it sounds like there were some entrepreneurial seeds planted on the trying to figure out how to water the plants. I would have loved to have seen that contraption. But what else would you say, were there any kind of generosity seeds planted during those years as well? So three questions there in one. Sorry.
Yeah, so I do recall, what I didn't tell you is the stories of stripping the wires and, plugging them into this wall and getting to see them zap. And some of these things do not recommend trying. long before I, but I was learning about electricity and life. And so my story really got depth as I had doors closed. So early on, my parents got divorced when I was 13. Hmm. That was a big closed door in a relationship. I mean, and we, you know, when you grow up in a family and your parents decide to separate, it was hard. And my sister and myself, you know, we grew closer together. We did have friends as we went. We had support within our church community. The youth group did gather around us. And that was probably the core of it up here on Signal Mountain, Tennessee, which is where we moved back to, you know, many years later. Mm-hmm. And then as I got into college, you know, we would volunteer. We'd engage with work projects of helping people. We got to see, you know, it when we gave, giving from actually going and doing just felt deeper to me than giving a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. And that grew as time went on. The examples, the people that when I look back, you know, later again, the mentors, there were mentors that popped up in my life that both as direct mentors at critical times in life, you know, that they came to life in critical times. We developed rapport in regular life, but then came to life in meaningful times, both for me personally, as well as for us, is that we had marriage mentors. And I'm not a big fan of reinventing the wheel. I think probably those mistakes and opportunities to work hard and realize, wow, I can't do this on my own, or this is way more complex, taught me working with a team and a group is more rewarding. And then also, it's just really, it is valuable to not to learn from others that have gone before us. And there's a whole host of ways to go about that.
Yeah, that's a great growth mindset. So before we leave, sorry, one last question. Did you sell anything during those inventing youth years, your serial entrepreneur mindset? Did you build or barter and sell anything during those years?
Yeah, when I tried to sell a number of things. I had the typical, I did the lemonade stand thing and, you know, did actively out there selling. I also created a design program to code pressure vessel designs. You know, when I was just coming out of high school, believe it or not. And I thought for sure there'd be a huge market for this. This is your typical engineer mindset that I found something that surely would save the five people in the world that could use this. And I didn't realize there are only five people in the world that needed that, but it worked. I thought it worked pretty well, but it just didn't have a market. And I learned, yeah, through those mistake or examples of business and life.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Take us through some of the university years and when you met your wife.
Yes. Yeah, I had studied electricity quite a bit. I was a geek and loved things you couldn't see, but were there. And what I didn't recognize at the time was, wow, that's a recipe for how God works. We know the Holy Spirit's there. Electricity, I knew it was there and you could see the outcomes of it. And so when I applied to engineering school, I applied to Georgia Tech and I applied, you picked your major at the beginning and I applied as an electrical engineer. And they said, hey, we would love to have you at Georgia Tech. You can be any kind of engineer you want, just not an electrical engineer. And I didn't know there was another type of engineering. So I ended up going with mechanical. They had already accepted enough electrical engineers. They didn't have any room for that season. So that was a closed door that opened up a lot more opportunities. And mechanical engineering ended up being the general practitioner of engineering. And I studied there, really engaged at Georgia Tech. I went to Georgetown University one summer for summer school because Georgia Tech at the time didn't have any business-related programs. And I wanted to look at international business and finance. I was intrigued by that. I was intrigued by money at the time. That was a component. At the time, I thought I might be involved in some sort of high-speed trading, you know, algorithm group.
What year was that?
Ended up becoming big over the years after that. But when I went to Georgetown, that was the only time I had a 4.0. I mean, I aced everything. It was, the math was so easy. Business was common sense to me. Started maybe realizing I've got What are my strengths? What do I like? You know, how did God make me? And then later in life, I ended up going to work at Siemens. It was my first job out of school. And Siemens was it's like GE of Germany. And they are a large international conglomerate with hundreds of thousands of employees and have been around for eons. And they poured into me in a way. It was a full 1 year of training program. You know, I learned some different engineering pieces. I learned about there's team and camaraderie. So it fed me in my love of learning. It fed me with the camaraderie of the group. And I made money in the meantime while I was learning. And so I didn't have a specific job during that like 1 year period. They poured into us as a group. And I still use some of those foundations today from what I learned in that very first year coming out of college. My first business I created actually came from working at Siemens. The programming piece back in the old days, they used to use these intricate devices of like a Swiss watch to do power plant controls. And it was just all mechanical stuff. So it's good I had an understanding of mechanical. But what I did is I used the new and growing computer systems to control those same systems. And so a business grew out of that. And so that was my first business, really, was doing control systems using Siemens technology within the power plant related and industrial plant related areas. And through that, when I ended up coming back to Chattanooga, and I met my wife, my now wife, at a Sunday school class that a friend of mine taught. And I felt a drawback. I was doing well in life and business. I thought career was going well, but I had begun just had an empty spot. And I knew that because of the example that my mom had been of being around different mentors that had poured into me, thought that is I need to go deeper here. And through that, the verse in Revelation talks about being lukewarm. This is another theme in my life. There are a number of closed door stories, but there another theme is being intentional. Mm-hmm. I found that I'd been intentional about, you know, gaining a career, finding ways to make money, but boy, I wasn't being intentional about my faith, and I didn't want it to just happen. So I dug in, and during that season, I ended up meeting my wife, that's a longer story than this podcast allows, but we met, went out for a date, and then she moved, and I didn't know she moved out of town, but it turns out I ended up building a project in Mississippi at the same place where she worked at Cargill. She was a commodities trader. She is a very sharp woman, and I've learned more from her than any other human. I mean, it has learned a lot about myself. You talk about generosity and focus and love of the Lord. She is, and also, you know, we did end up doing an amazing amount of premarital counseling because of, you know, my parents being divorced, and her grandparents had been divorced. We said, hey, we want to learn from other people and get this right. And so we spent an inordinate amount of time on premarital counseling, and it was very valuable. We learned a lot about each other. But the very first year of marriage, we decided to manage our money in a way that let's just track our expenses. And what we found is that after about a 6-month period, we look back at our expenses and we made very different decisions on how to spend those resources. And then we had the tithing conversation. Do you tithe, you know, is it pre-tax? Is it after-tax? You know, what does generosity look like? And I'm a little bit sad to say that at that point, felt like this, it really should be after-tax because we should be saving more. And it's just, it was really, that was probably one of the harder times in our marriage, was wrestling through priorities. And it was before we had that intentional conversation of, whose is this? Whose resources are these? Mm-hmm. And we did later discover, and we talked about it, but we didn't take it on ourselves that, hey, does God own it all? You know, what are we stewarding? And that came later in our marriage, really, when we developed that.
Well, I appreciate your sharing that, because I think a lot of people, that's where they do start, is wrestling with that basic idea. And I know you're on that was a level one discussion. Now you're hanging out with level 10 people on that discussion in your life. And we're going to get to that because I want to give a lot of airtime for you and Alan to talk about what you're doing together. But maybe quickly run us through the rest of the career. I know that's a podcast on its own, but maybe just kind of take us through the series of business ventures you've been involved in, and then maybe take us up to how you met Alan, and we'll let Alan take it from there.
Yeah. So I'd like to say it's all, you know, perfect story and I didn't make any mistakes, but I made every mistake you can possibly think of. I was incredibly disappointed. So I had a business in the 90s that, you know, we ended up building some industrial power plants and construction. So I had the opportunity to develop a characteristic of hard work and, you know, plant a few seeds. I had in my amazing sports career, you won't find me on any Hall of Fames, but I worked my tail off trying to make the tennis team. And the coach made me work my tail off to try to get rid of me, and I just wouldn't quit. So he finally was like, hey, listen, you've run enough miles. You don't need to, you know, you're not going to be playing on this team, of which had many, you know, national players on the team. You know, I realized that I could play golf, but I was not a great golf player. I had to work really hard to just do okay. And there were just some people gifted differently. And so within the business side, when I started in business, you know, and I didn't know accounting, you know, I learned accounting from talking to people, and we put together our first accounting package. I didn't know much about sales other than what Siemens taught me and probably my lemonade stand experience. But we learned as we went forward in those, you know, in those settings. And that it was the hard times that really refined us. We were blessed with an abundance of work. My methodology on business is pretty simple. After I learned the experience that, you know, I wasn't about to try to create another program or another business that I hope somebody would buy something, but I decided to flip that on its head and say, why don't we go after a business that where people are already buying, and what all we need to do is create a niche in a way that people would prefer to buy from us. So we didn't have to create a market, just go after an existing market. And that's what ended up doing within the mechanical contract. We did the electrical, we did the mechanical contracting, and then did some industrial power plant work. Early on in that business, I'd been involved, my stepfather, my mother was remarried, and I went into my stepfather said, oh, I'll help you out a little bit. So I worked very hard for, you know, 6-7 years building this business. After we got married, I had an agreement with my stepfather that he would transfer over his ownership percentage. So I thought, okay, it's all in the family. There's not a problem here. What I came to find out after working for 6 or 7 years building a business is that years earlier, he had transferred his portion of ownership that just happened to be the majority ownership. At the time, it didn't really bother me. It didn't matter. I thought, I didn't understand what a minority shareholder was. Mm-hmm. So I had spent my time building this business. When I found out, hey, you know, for family and life and timing, when was this going to happen? When were we going to make this transfer? I came out that it had happened years before, and he'd given it to his blood relative, who happened to be an engineer. He was in school for a number of years during that process. And we had a good relationship, or I thought we did, but that was a real disappointment to me. And that was a closed door that we had, my wife and I had owned a house and we had a mortgage and we were building another house. We'd taken out a mortgage on that. And at the same time, she lost her job. She'd been working for Cargill, went with a startup, and that startup went under with the dot-com bubble. And I went, you know, our lives went from double income, no kids, to double mortgage, no income. And that was, you'd think that'd be just a horrible, a very tense time or a lot of stress. But that was a time for us where we were at peace, and we were truly at peace. And, you know, we, never forget, we slept in our new home that had a stereo and a pull-out couch. And we had a stove, a hot, you know, hot wood stove. And we slept in this house where it snowed each night that we, after we first moved in. And we just went to the Lord and prayed. And it was just a piece where you know that God's got you in his hands. And so combination of that, as well as a recognition, when I went to one of our marriage mentors, the man in that was Bill Taylor, and he was an attorney, an experienced attorney. And he and his wife had taught us a lot about the things we thought were important and the things that were actually important. And he said, Ben, you know, after I talked and told him this whole story of the business and life stuff going on, he said, well, Ben, you know, being a minority shareholder is a little bit like being a one-legged man in a tail kicking contest. And I realized, wow. And believe it or not, over the course of the next 6 months after that, you know, during that season, in the next 6 months, is when my wife and I really decided that, hey, it doesn't make sense that we have each other. The Lord has got us. Nothing really belongs to us, and we're here for a short time. So why don't we start naming calling things like they are, that God owns them all. And that's where the name Sunscope came up, that everything is under the sun of God. And so Sunscope is for us putting a name to what already is, that God owns it all. And how do we behave more and more that way?
So did you exit that other business and start from scratch?
Yes, it did exit from that business very quickly. It was not the most economical, or it was not an economic powerhouse victory. But God redeemed the next, that closed door led to a whole bunch of open doors. And it helped point to what is and was really important. I think at the time my identity was, tied up a lot in that. But overnight, God revealed that, no, it doesn't have to be. And that was hard. It was hard on my heart. You know, we had family involved, that there's a lot of broken trust.
Yeah.
That was much harder than the economic component related to it. So yes, I did get the opportunity to work at a place where I could use my skills, help people in developing countries, and make money at it too. And that was a fun season. And that's when I learned about wind energy and got involved and saw how wind power was going to grow like crazy. And at the time, at the big wind energy conference that nowadays has 20,000 people or more, there were maybe 400 people at the entire conference. And so you get to meet everybody in the whole industry, and just saw where the market was going and dove in, and God blessed us. We had a team of great, a team of wonderful people that came around us. And so the market was ripe. That's when we started making mistakes. On the mistakes I look back on were the ones of not being intentional about values and culture. We were intentional with each other, kind of the small group of the five people that came in, and we worked very hard. We thought we could just lead by example. And we didn't have as many things written out as to what we're about and why. And that was we had the opportunity to reinvent ourselves a number of times. That was, I'll call it our phase of, hey, God owns it all. We're going to work our tails off. You know, it's going to make a lot of money, and we're going to do it by example. And then, we're going to give back to the Lord. And the seeds were planted during some of that time from Truett Cathy. And from the generous giving folks, that kind of before the generous giving, planting seeds. We heard the story of Letourneau, people giving everything away. And we heard the concepts of a finish line. Those were those phases that planted seeds, some of which made a lot of sense. Setting a finish line made a ton of sense to me, saying, okay, how much do you need for yourself? And then, but the giving it all away, the whole company away, that was a stretch for me at that moment. I was thinking that's a big move. That's really it. So it matched what Sunscope was about. My actions weren't quite there yet when, at that point, 24 years ago, but those seeds grew.
Ben, talk a little bit about Signal Energy and that venture. That was a
significant venture for you.
Yes, Signal Energy. We went into the wind energy business, doing design and construction for wind energy power plants, and then got into solar energy, and then even into large scale transmission lines. The business grew from, you know, some of our early projects were working directly for, you know, wind energy manufacturer. We managed a $200 million project up in Canada relatively early on. We bought wind turbines at different times. These are massive, you know, they're massive pieces of equipment that you need big cranes to put up. And that's how we ended up getting connected with the Barnhart organization. BT, Brian Thomas, just we had a lot of values that matched within our organizations. The company grew like crazy because the industry grew like crazy. And our particular model was built on, when we became intentional about what we were about, it was about harnessing creative energy. That's what we called that we're all made in God's image. And we knew that if we behave that way with our small group, that was one thing. We said, how do we share this concept to the broader group? And so we were building maybe a nuclear plant's worth of, you know, of renewable energy in a period of a year or two. And so it grew and it scaled up very quickly. And we decided we need to have really intentional values that we can hire to. There's a guy named Horst Schulze that writes about excellence, you know, working with excellence and the hotel and related businesses. It all probably stayed in a hotel. Yeah, at least here, people listening stayed in a hotel. So read Horst Schulze's book, The Excellence Wins. And it talks about, you know, caring for people and having dignity of work. And we decided that we had to be very intentional about the type of people that we hired. And then if we talked about those things that matter to us and then connected people to a greater purpose, and our purpose was harnessing creative energy of our people. And then we decided, all right, if we've got excellence, if we've got really this model also of servant leadership, we brought in some of the Chick-fil-A folks to help us out with modeling and being intentional about servant leadership. But we were always running short on leaders. And I had the opportunity, I don't know if you've read this book, Joy at Work by Dennis Bakke. Read that, you know, it's probably 20 years old or so, 25 years old. And really caused us, you know, a friend of mine, Robin Russell, who worked with us, he and I struggled with, what is this? How can you use this in a business where you have really structured systems? There was a lot of autonomy in the way the structure they talked about. And what is joy really at work? And found that since we're made in God's image, how do we unlock that untapped potential and help people live out who God made them to be? And so we call it the multiplying leaders concept. There is a culmination of a need, as well as, you know, I read another book called The Decision Maker, coincidentally, Dennis wrote as well. And it's a good storytelling of that the CEO leader at a certain point, you probably came to your position by doing and by making decisions and being involved in the day-to-day activities. But the greatest decision is deciding who makes the decisions. And I was, even though I was a detailed engineering person, I knew, hey, I need to transition. And help, really, since our goal was to help people live out who God made them to be, it was a realization for us as a leadership team that we had accidentally chased off some really great leaders that pour into other leaders. There's one like poster child example, a guy named Joe Pirano. He wanted so badly to pour into other leaders, but we were focused, or our discussions made it sound like we cared about the success of the project, like the typical things. You know, it's got to be on time, you know, under budget, happy customer. What we ended up adding on was this concept of, you know, how have you multiplied leaders through the process? Mm. And then how do you help people? It turns out people don't make decisions by watching somebody make decisions. God made us in his image, not to watch him do stuff, for us to actually be involved in it and engaged. And so we came up with systems to really encourage and reward and incentivize people to help others make decisions. and then help, you know, be there for them as a mentor, but really have younger leaders make and have other leaders come up and start making decisions early on. And that was another flipping things upside down and changed everything.
Well, great. It's good stuff. Tell us, Ben, a little bit about the next phase, the exit there, and sort of how you, I guess that's another closed door maybe, and how you use that door to walk into a whole nother batch of things.
Yes. So an incredible story of how we were growing and the opportunity came to potentially, I had partners, you know, in that business as well. It was actually a partner with a person who ran the company. He'd retired and we'd grown. At the time they were the largest contractor in Tennessee. And I guess we grew to be the largest contractor in Tennessee as a part of them, but we superseded them, this organization. And so Signal Energy was ready for some more growth. And so I proposed to go ahead and buy out the pieces, you know, the rest of the company and go ahead and move forward. And it happened because of some decisions that were being made with a sister company. So Signal Energy we grew like crazy, and the renewable energy sector had its big ups and big downs. But we kept growing and our customers loved us because of the culture and what we were about. And when there was an opportunity to either buy the business out in full, because I'm part of the business, the solution went to selling the business instead of buying the business. And part of that was to enable the operational team that was in place, because I'd really turned everything over from an operations side to the team and had decided, hey, these are the people that are, you know, that are making the decisions. They're ready to make all the decisions in the future for that business. So I was looking out 5 years ahead. And so I ended up selling my stake in the business. You know, currently a large private equity group owns it. But then we ended up taking our kids on a 6-month trip around the world. It was Daryl Hill had said, hey, if I could convince Kathy, you know, I would go travel around the world and go see people that we knew and see what God's doing around the world. And so I borrowed with somebody else. I said, thank you, Daryl. That's what we want to do. And we call it relationship travel. And so we went to go see what God was doing around the world. And our kids were all, they're 10, 12, and 14 at the time. Just a beautiful time. We saw missions work, friends from business, friends from school. Came back and thought, okay, this God, you're going to reveal to us. We are so open-handed. Like, show us, Lord, where you want us to be next. We are willing to go travel any parts of the world. In the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, I hope it's not India, but we'd be willing to do that too. I love India. Indian food just doesn't love me, you know? Sure. People in India are amazing. We came back and what kept coming to me is, where is the Christian-led Berkshire Hathaway? Now, what I didn't mention is I did end up giving part of the company, my ownership of the company away over the period of Signal Energy before, you know, before selling the company. So I came to a realization that, hey, we should start, you know, granting this over and putting the Sunscope, putting the resources where they actually should, you know, where they are, which is, you know, putting it where God owns it. And that's the way we felt. So we thought, hey, where is this Christian-led Berkshire Hathaway? You know, and I could just come in alongside and join other folks doing that same, you know, safeguarding great companies into the future. And I didn't find it any scale. What I did find is there are a number of young leaders who desire that and wanted to do that. I think of the, you know, the Garden City folks, the, you know, Mike Arrieta, and then think of, you know, Luke and Michael and Henry and the folks that, you know, engaged at Sovereigns. Max Anderson's working on something similar. There are a number of different groups that are engaged in that. And so the exciting thing is there are a number of young folks working on that. The Kingdom Companies Group is another, you know, organization that has grown very well and is stewarding that, you know, into the future. And so, yes, when part of the story is after finding that there weren't really anything, it wasn't anything of any scale. We had my wife ended up with a number of health issues. We had a daughter that had a number of health issues. And I had the opportunity and the availability to be able to take care and to spend time with family when it was really needed. And that was a blessing. And we didn't see that coming. I spent a good bit of last week with a friend who lost his wife a handful of years ago. And he had just sold his company and then found out 2 weeks later that his wife had terminal pancreatic cancer. And he was, you know, able to just be there with her and the family. And it is, I feel like, and it got orchestrated that time for us as a family to really, you know, to plant the seeds of, you know, of what stewardship looks like at a different phase, but then also to really pour in to the family that, you know, frankly, I probably siloed a little bit from the business side, but it was a miracle and a real blessing for me to be able to spend time during that season. And now my wife is doing well. My daughter's doing well. Probably the most significant practice that we picked up during that time period was my wife and I, during the lows, we started this practice of waking up a little bit early and getting coffee together and then sharing gratefuls, just things that we're grateful about. And some days it was hard. I mean, she might share a number of them or I might share. There were some days we had a hard time coming up with any. But as we developed a rhythm, one thing it did is it helped us to reframe the day and turn it into a day of possibilities. It tore down the fear and the things from the enemy. It was just, it's a reset, a daily reset. And then we would say we're grateful, have our coffee, and then we pray together. And that has been one of the most meaningful practices that we've, you know, continued to do, even during times of great things going on, but it lasts and it's the same through all times.
Good stuff. Ben, speak a little bit more about the Kingdom Companies Group, kind of explain what that is. And I remember talking to you and hearing your vision and saying, you know, we're thinking about the same kind of stuff. Might you want to join us? And you know, you had gone through a liquidity event and you had some bandwidth and you decided to invest it in the Kingdom Companies Group, not your dollars, but yourself. And talk a little bit about that and the decision to do that and how that's working.
Yes. Yeah, so like I had, what I said earlier is that, you know, when I look at my time, talent, and treasure and how to invest, I want to be intentional. And so in my life, I had lived a more of a siloed life, I guess, or when I look back in my 20s and 30s, and as time went on, I want to live a more integrated life and not a balanced life. I had a balanced life the way I wanted it balanced, but I wanted to lead a more integrated life. And that integrated life meant, you know, recognizing we're all made in God's image and that through business and entrepreneurs can really cause a lot of opportunity and dignity and hope. So when Alan had mentioned, hey, we are, as when Alan mentioned, Kingdom Companies Group is a group of companies, you know, 3-4 companies that were coming together to glorify God. And what does that mean? Each different company's grown up, but what does that mean as a group of companies? And there was, when you spend your time and effort building an organization that is flourishing, and that's now what I focus on, the idea of these Christian-led Berkshire Hathaway models. To me, that is about building, multiplying businesses, great businesses with flourishing cultures. And after you build a business, what do you do with it? Do you sell it and flip it off to the, you know, to somebody else for, you know, just cash? And or do you safeguard that? And if you have a flourishing organization where people are thriving and where the customers, you know, you're supplying a need for the market and you're connecting people to a greater purpose. So those are elements that are enduring and really ought to be safeguarded. So when I had been looking for those different models of what it can look like, a great example through a particular model of charitable ownership was Kingdom Companies Group. And I was excited to come alongside and see what I could do to help.
Oh, man. You know, and you're really understating, I mean, the story that, Ben, of you coming into that group and using your skills to take a company that was struggling, one of the group companies in the group was struggling, and how you poured into them, not because it was going to increase your portfolio, but because it was going to increase Kingdom portfolio. And the story of that company turning around and being now highly profitable is a great story. And it was, it, again, it was not something that changed your balance sheet, but it did change the Kingdom balance sheet. So thank you so much for what you did there. It was a great story.
Well Alan, go ahead. You built up a lot of goodwill with, and I was intrigued by the way that the Kingdom Companies Group, with Barnhart and Kingdom Companies Group had come alive. And so I knew I wanted to say yes when you first asked about the turnaround company. I also realized I had not been involved in a turnaround or in a business that needed help like that. And so I talked to my wife, we prayed about it. And then I picked up the phone and called people who did turnarounds for a living that I really trusted and respected. And what I came to find out over time is that those same fundamentals that apply to building a business apply to turnarounds. And that is having intentional values, that is connecting people to a greater purpose. And then it's having a defined strategy where those become your differentiators in the marketplace. And the people that have run that have done great job. I mean, God has blessed an organization and people with miracles.
Well, I'm so glad you said yes. I've learned so much from you, and you have been a tremendous blessing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. We should probably do a whole podcast just on the Kingdom Companies Group and the concepts there of sharing. I know you share ideas in the giving and obviously in helping each other and that sort of thing. So we probably ought to do that, Alan. But just in the interest of time today, you know, Ben, thanks so much for sharing your story. We always try to wrap up with just a practical tip with some business owner, you know, walking the dog, listening to this and thinking, man, Ben's had this big career and all this success and that's all great. But anyway, here I am in the middle of my career. Maybe things are starting to go well, or maybe I'm in the pit. It doesn't matter. We all experience both. But what practical tip would you just leave for that business owner who wants to think about using their business as a platform for generosity?
When Alan invited me to come into the Kingdom Companies Group and help, you know, I knew that I recognized that I was made uniquely. My wife had helped me recognize that too. There's pros and cons to that. But I had skills, I had abilities. I learned about where my strengths were and I had the time available. And when you pour into the way God uniquely made you, and then you look around and you see, hey, how do we come alongside of the people that we have influence on, the people that are in our sphere of influence, then a heart of gratitude unlocks and untaps that hidden value and helps people live out who God made them to be. And at the end of the day, that's where our family mission statement is: we live adventurous stewardship. And that is because we're made in God's image. Stewardship for us is about going out there and being, putting yourself out there, and certainly is not about hoarding and burying talents. So,
amen.
Live adventurous stewardship.
Wow. I love that. I'm gonna borrow that, Ben, if you don't mind.
But stewardship.
Adventurous stewardship. I love that. And thank you, Ben, for investing not only your time and talents, but your treasure into the Kingdom. As I just want to echo what Alan said earlier. I think we could also do a separate podcast just on this concept of sitting down with your wife and focusing on what we have to be grateful for. Sometimes we only focus on that when we feel like we need to really search for things to be grateful for. And then all of a sudden it's like this long list. We went through that when we were struggling through my wife's diagnosis. And it's amazing how that changes our heart. But yeah, so Jeff, we need to have at least two more podcasts with Ben.
Okay, I'm gonna somehow release this with a title of this soft-spoken engineer with hard-hitting ideas. The title that I'm coming up with. So Ben, it's been a real pleasure to have you on. Thank you to Jeff and Alan for sharing in the fun, and thank you everybody for joining this week's Generous Business Owner podcast. Check us out at www.generousbusinessowner.com. Sign up for the newsletter. Share this with a friend who needs to hear it. Thanks again, Ben.
Hey, thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Ellen. Appreciate what you're doing.
See everybody next week.
Thanks for listening to the Generous Business Owner Podcast with Jeff Thomas, Alan Barnhart, and Jeff Rutt. Make sure to follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode. You can find the guest contact information in the show notes. Stay tuned for the next episode.